Our next presenter is Bill Templin. Bill is the principal geneticist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Gene Conservation Lab. His current research involves Chinook salmon population structure and developing genetic stock ID tools of Chinook salmon stocks. Bill's presentation is entitled Using Genetic Tools to Inform Management of Alaska Chinook Salmon, Current Capabilities and Outlook.
Bill. All right, while we wait for that to show up, I'd like to mention that the work that I'm going to present to you today, this afternoon, has been built on the backs of a lot of people working over the past couple of decades to collect, to analyze, to statistically analyze, to develop methods. Several people here in the room, the work even currently in our lab is on Chinook salmon is so widespread that we don't actually just have one person working on it in the lab, but we actually have three people, and each of them is working in different regions of the state. So if you're at all interested in applications in Southeast Alaska, look up Sarah Gilk-Baumer. If you're at all interested in Cook Inlet applications, you want to look for Andy Barkley, and Yukon River, it would be Nicholas Dukovich. The other thing I want to say is I understand that I'm the last speaker for today. That's a blessing and a curse. The blessing is that I kind of can speak off the top of what other people have said, so I'm going to adjust my talk and not cover GSI quite so much because Dr. Narum covered it pretty well. And the curse is that I'm sure you guys all have questions, and some of what I'm going to say, you may not listen to what I say because you're so busy thinking about what it is you're going to ask me. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to take you on a whirlwind tour of a lot of information that we have on Chinook salmon across the state of Alaska. And I'll be willing to answer all your questions during that hour and a half that we have. So Chinook salmon are distributed across the North Pacific from Russia to the North America and as far down as California. Now, this distribution that I'm showing you here is a cartoon. It's not the full distribution, but this is where the main centers of Chinook salmon spawning take place. And as you can see, Alaska is smack dab in the center of the geographic distribution of Chinook salmon. If there's any type of international Chinook salmon process, it's got to involve Alaska practically, except for down along the southern border of British Columbia, as well as many of the fisheries that we've talked about today and the research cruises also that we'll be talking about tomorrow interact with Alaska Chinook salmon. It's a wide area, and anything we're going to do in the marine waters of Alaska is going to have to include, take into account the potential that we're actually going to bump into fish from Russia, as well as fish from British Columbia and potentially down to Oregon, or maybe even south occasionally. So in order to do that, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, beginning back in the 90s, began to pull together collections of Chinook salmon from spawning locations throughout the state. And then through collaborations with other researchers, we were able to pull in information from British Columbia, Pacific Northwest, and from Russia. So a lot of the processes and abilities that we have, capabilities that we have, are based upon a lot of collaborative work and years of collection and study. The black dots that you see on this map indicate spawning locations where we have at least 50, but on average about 100 to 115 Chinook salmon representing that spawning location. Now, that may take place over several years, but that's actually a good thing because then we get a sense of temporal variation. As you can see, we have about 3 in Kamchatka Peninsula. I wish I had a pointer that worked, but it's down in the lower left corner. That's not where Kamchatka really is. If you look at the inset map in the right hand, and I can see all my titles are cut off, Kamchatka's off the Siberian tip of Siberia. And you can see the majority of our samples are centered in Alaska and British Columbia, but we do have representatives as far south as California. This baseline was published in 2011. It began to be used in about 2008, 2009. And this is the baseline that's used currently for bycatch studies as well as research cruises that you're going to hear about tomorrow. When we split these populations up into similar groups, we come up with what we call our reporting groups. Now, a reporting group does not mean that all the populations within each of these bubbles are exactly genetically the same. It just means that they're similar enough that we can distinguish them from the populations in the next bubble over. We split this baseline up into about 11 groups. And that was because it was originally to be used for looking at bycatch and juvenile studies in the Bering Sea. So we weren't going to expect to bump into a lot of fish from one small population. Rather, instead, we wanted to find out what the composition was and what the contribution potentially was of large-scale groups. So I'm going to start now by talking to you about large-scale, broad-scale groups. And as I take you through this, we'll also narrow down into what we can distinguish in more local fisheries or more local research projects. So let's begin with Southeast Alaska. Southeast Alaska has a long history. We began working with genetic stock identification of harvests of Chinook salmon in Southeast Alaska for the purpose of providing information on for management under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Now the black dots on this are the same black dots that you saw previously on the big large scale map. The red dots are indicating locations that have been added since this baseline was published. So we've increased our abilities by increasing the representation of populations within drainages and within Southeast Alaska. Throughout the rest of my talk, when you see black, that means that's something that we've been using and is currently used by National Marine Fisheries Service for bycatch. The red are things that are added and ready to go in at the next possible date. Now, we're not stopping there. We continue to look for samples and to improve our resolution and to improve our representation of Chinook salmon throughout the regions of Alaska. You can see orange dots are places where we have samples, we just don't have enough or they haven't been analyzed yet. And white dots are locations where we know fish spawn, but we can't seem to get samples from them. They're either very remote, difficult to access, or maybe we just haven't had the funding or opportunity to go there and collect them. Now, in that large-scale map, you saw that we split Southeast Alaska up into two groups. There's the Northeast Gulf of Alaska, which includes Setuk River and then the Alsek River. And then there's the big coastal Southeast Alaska group. Now, we're not saying that these are all the same again. What I'm saying is that in large-scale studies, like out in the Bering Sea, we're not going to try to identify diepack hatchery out there. We're going to identify the component that comes from Southeast Alaska. We can actually split these groups up into smaller groups because genetically they're distinct enough. So in more local fisheries, we can segregate the composition of a harvest or a research sample into smaller groups, such as the Setuk can be separated from the Alsek River. Northern Southeast Alaska, including King Salmon River. And then we've got a large group, coastal Southeast Alaska. And then the two drainages that were introduced to you earlier by Phil, the Taku and the Stikeen. In addition, we can distinguish the Andrew Creek brood stock and its wild progenitor stock. This is one of the main hatchery brood stocks that's used in hatcheries in Southeast Alaska. So there are times when knowing the hatchery component, which would also include not just the ad-clipped fish, but also the wild Andrew Creek component, sometimes that's useful and we can do it. Now, applications are, of course, to the troll and gillnet fisheries, as well as the sport fisheries in Southeast Alaska and the coast of Gulf of Alaska. But we can also go into a smaller area and look at the terminal fisheries in the Taku and the Stikeen and look at the component of Southeast Alaska to Taku or Stikeen, which are, of course, British Columbia and so it's important for treaty purposes to be able to distinguish the Alaska component from the British Columbia component. Now, if we move westward to South Central Alaska, You can see on this map that we have the Susitna drainage, Cook Inlet, and then the Copper River drainage. Again, the black indicates populations that are represented in the current baseline, and the red are ones that have been added since. And you can see that there's been quite a bit of work occurring in Cook Inlet. That work is ongoing to increase our abilities to identify local stocks of Chinook salmon in local fisheries within Cook Inlet. But work is also going on in the Copper River, especially to try to identify Chitna River fish, which to some estimates can contribute as much as 30% to the total run of Copper River, but we have only represented by a single population in our current baseline. Now, this is one remote, highly remote, very difficult system to sample. We've been working for 3 years to get samples from there, and it's either high water or low Chinook runs. There's always something, but we'll continue to work at it. As well as you can see, there are locations within the Yentna and the west coast, or the western Cook Inlet, where we're continuing to sample to improve our resolution and representation. Now, in the large scale, you can see we broke these up into two groups, what we call Northwest Gulf of Alaska and Copper. Northwest Gulf of Alaska extends all the way down to Chignik. So you can see the reds going down off the edge of the map there. That doesn't mean that we can't distinguish those. In fact, we can. And not just distinguish them from Kodiak and Chignik, but even within drainage, we can distinguish groups of populations. So in the Copper, we can distinguish Upper Copper from Gulkana, from Lower Copper populations. This type of distinction has actually been used for 2005 to 2008 in the fishery at the mouth of the Copper, as well as in 2005 to look at run timing of stocks past the Bear Canyon fish wheels. In Cook Inlet, you can see we have a large group that includes Susitna, Yentna, and the western Cook Inlet. That's not because those populations are not distinct, but we're still working on that. So before we go out and say that we can distinguish 3 or 4 or 10 different groups, we want to make sure that we know what we're talking about. We definitely know that we can distinguish them from Northeast Cook Inlet, which includes Turnagain Arm and Kinnick, as well as from Kenai River and the Kisilof and the south coast of the Kenai Peninsula. Now, within the Kenai River, we can distinguish two groups, an early run and a late run, which might also be called tributary and main stem. And within the Kisilof River, we can distinguish Crooked Creek from Kisilof main stem. Now, again, we would only do that for local fisheries. We wouldn't be doing that out in the Gulf of Alaska or Bering Sea. In addition, Deshka River appears to be significantly distinct, and that's important because within our GAP plan, one of the projects we propose is to look at fisheries in Cook Inlet, so sample from the fisheries in Cook Inlet and do GSI as described by Dr. Narum, as well as at the mouth of the Copper. But in addition, we'd like to look at fish wheel samples from low in the Susitna and then calculate the Deshka component of that, and we can use that as a mark recapture experiment to estimate the total escapement to the Susitna drainage. Moving south and west, we move down to the Alaska Peninsula and Kodiak. You can see it's sparsely sampled, but pretty representatively. There are only two wild stocks on Kodiak Island, Iakulik and Karluk. The other stocks are hatchery placement. And then there's only one real stock that we've been able to discover on the south side of the Alaska Peninsula, that's Chignik. And then along the north coast of the Alaska Peninsula, there are several. So you can see that we're continuing to work, though, to locate Chinook populations. It's a very remote area, and it's possible that we've missed Chinook spawning, significant Chinook spawning in this area. So just recently, the department received some funds to have a three-year project, to do its utmost to collect samples from the Alaska Peninsula and Kodiak Island to improve the baseline and representation. Now, these are the large-scale groups. You got that coastal western Alaska up at the top. North Alaska Peninsula is one group. And then the northwest Gulf of Alaska, that red thing that extended down out of Cook Inlet, ends up down here in Chignik. And we can actually split those, Chignik, from Kodiak, which is important because one of the projects we're proposing is to do genetic stock identification in the nearby fisheries of Chignik and Karluk to see if our assumption that they're catching local stocks is supportable. And then last, moving to the very largest section of Alaska, we have the AYK and Bristol Bay area. You can see that there are quite a concentration of black dots, but then there are concentrations within that of red dots, especially within Norton Sound, where we've been working hard the last 3 or 4 years to get populations in Norton Sound represented, as well as within the Nushagak and nearby drainages within the Bristol Bay. There's quite a bit more information to be added to the baseline. But if we toss in places where we know there are fish or we have a few fish from, you can see that there's a lot more coverage to accomplish. We continue to work at it every year, getting samples. And there are many people here in the audience who have provided us samples from here. And we thank you, and I want you to see that your sample's on there. Now, again, we can separate that into three groups, broad-scale groups. There's a big coastal western Alaska group that goes from Norton Sound, lower Yukon, lower Kuskokwim, where all the Kuskokwim, and Bristol Bay. And then there's a middle Yukon and an upper Yukon. Now, before I go into the big regional problems that we actually have there, I want to describe what's happening in the Yukon River, because we have a long-term project for genetic stock identification of harvests, both subsistence, commercial, as well as test fishery harvests within the Yukon, to help us to provide information to managers, both in season and post season. So we can easily genetically distinguish Canadian from U.S. populations, except for that one little red dot there to the left of the border, which is Candic. It's not a very large producer, and we actually, until we started genetics, using genetics, pretty much anything that was upstream of Fort Yukon was considered a Canadian fish, so it's not really changing much there. The ones that you see up there in the Porcupine, they're orange. We don't have enough samples to add them to the baseline, so I'm not going to tell you which group they assign to. They might look like the U.S., they might look like Canada, or they might be their own, and we don't know yet. So don't be disturbed by those three dots hanging out there. We will get to them eventually when we have sufficient samples. Now, the U.S. portion can be broken, like I showed before, into a lower and a middle. But then the middle Yukon can be split further, and we do provide this information in our genetic stock identification. It can be split into a Koyukuk, into a Tanana component, and into a upper U.S. component, which includes everything from Beaver Creek right on up through Shinjek and Colleen in the Porcupine River. Now, this is what we need for Alaska management, but we do like to help our Canadian counterparts out. So we can provide also distinctions within some portions. If we have sufficient samples and the need is there, we can provide breakout for the Canadian portion of the harvest as well. And those portions include a border group, a large group called Pelly, includes Pelly and we'll call it the Pelly. And then the Carmax is the next one further upstream, and then at the very top is Tokini and Teslin. Now let's go back to the big picture here. You can see that these are all the large groups, but if you can see all the large groups. I hit the wrong button. There we go. These are all the large groups, and these are all based on the black dots, this is the baseline that we had. But if we add in the populations that we've added since this baseline was first implemented, you can see there's a lot more red, a lot better coverage, and we can actually distinguish much finer groups. So these are the groups that I kind of took you through on the tour that we did. Now, again, we're not going to necessarily distinguish small-scale groups on large-scale fisheries, but in more local fisheries and more local samples, we can distinguish these smaller groups. And we can even go smaller, but those would be for specialized applications. Now, you see down in the lower right hand, you see British Columbia and West Coast. It's not that we can't distinguish groups within those, but those are outside of Alaska's purview. We haven't really spent time and energy and Alaska resources on trying to distinguish British Columbia groups of populations. It's really not a management issue. It can be done, and we actually have some collaborations with West Coast researchers to do that. They're actually working to fill in some of this, as well as to add more markers. We're working together, like with Dr. Narum and Dr. Seeb back there and others to improve that representation. But for our purposes today, we're concentrating on Alaska. So the other problem for Alaska is that large brown blob, which is a real big problem on the left coast of Alaska. That's what we call the coastal western Alaska, and you saw that in Dr. Iannelli's talk earlier this morning. It's really difficult because everybody would like to know in the bycatch, are those Norton Sound fish, or those Yukon fish, or those Kuskokwim fish, or Nushigak fish? And genetically speaking, we can't distinguish those right now with this baseline. However, we continue to work at it. So what we'd like to do is break that out into four large-scale groups. At the very minimum, break them out into four large-scale groups. So what we've done is invested some of our time and money, as well as collaborating with the University of Washington on a project that's looking to discover genetic markers that will distinguish these four groups. It's cutting-edge research. And so I'm happy to report to you today the results of this project. First of all, we started by taking one population from each of the four groups, and we took about 50 to 60 individuals, and we sequenced those. Now, that's pretty easy for me to say, but until just a couple years ago, this was not really an easy thing to do. So again, like I said, this is on the cutting edge of technology, and sequencing that many fish the cost of that has come down, and the value of that is way out through the roof. It's much better to sequence 50 fish than to sequence a single fish, because 50 fish does a better job of representing the population. So we sequenced them. We looked for differences in the genome between those fish, especially for differences between different populations of fish. So on the left-hand side, on the y-axis, just think of that as the difference among populations going from 0 to about 0.15. So as you go up on the graph, things get more different. Now, what we've done is taken 12,000 of the genetic differences that we found within these four populations, and we've sorted them by how different they are, and those are going from left to right, from 0 to 12,000. And you can see that it increases about 6,000. We go from about a difference of 0 between populations. It starts increasing. And then on the far right-hand side, you can see that there are some genetic markers that are very distinct between populations. That's what we want to key in on. If we were doing this randomly, like we used to do, we'd have a lot of populations down in the 0 to 6, or a lot of markers down in the 0 to 6,000, which would be different among individuals, but not different among populations. So we concentrated on that red section on the tail of this plot. And that's where the best bang for the buck is. Okay, now once we do that, though, we have to ensure we're only using one population from each region. We need to ensure that these differences are real, that they're truly differences between regions and not just between the populations we happen to pick. So we went and we screened these in populations, 24 populations, about 2,000 individuals. The portion on the right-hand side, we chose 287 of those markers. They're called SNPs. You can see the regions are color-coded here. So we have four from Norton Sound, three from the lower Yukon, a lot from the Kuskokwim, I'm not going to count them here, and about six from Bristol Bay. And we looked at those markers among those populations, looking for differences not just between populations now, but between regions, because that's what we want to tell apart. And it's pretty nice to say that using at least the 287 that we have, we can distinguish adequately Norton Sound from Lower Yukon River from a big gamish of the Kuskokwim and Bristol Bay at this point in time. That's good news. That's going to be very helpful. And we're continuing to work on the Kuskokwim River Bristol Bay question. So back to the big screen. We have these collections. We've increased the baseline. For work that you're going to see tomorrow, it'll be identified to these 11 stock groups. So the stuff that you see in the bycatch and in the high seas research, when they talk about Chinook, they'll be identified to these groups. Oh. There we go. And one exciting result of this is that we can now use information not just from the bycatch, but also from Japanese cruise samples and samples from the Russians through our collaborations internationally to look at the movement of stocks both in time and space. And so here are some early results. At the top two plots are spring and winter of Russian stocks. The bottom two are spring and winter of Western Alaska Yukon River stocks. And you can see that there are places where they overlap, but there are also places where they just don't go. The Russian fish don't seem to come that far east. And the Western Alaska stocks, especially in the winter, tend to pile up along the Alaska Peninsula, at least according to the indications that we currently have. So what do we draw from this? The baseline representation is adequate for most applications. We're continuously improving it by adding populations and markers. But we still need to improve resolution both in coastal Western Alaska and Western Cook Inlet. Areas where additional collections are needed are the Alaska Peninsula Kodiak, Bristol Bay, West Cook Inlet, Chittenden River, as well as hatcheries and transboundary rivers in southeast Alaska. Applications. Genetic stock identification applications are well established in southeast Alaska, the Kenai River, Yukon River, and in the bycatch. But there are potential places, additional applications where it might be helpful in the Copper River, Cook Inlet, Kodiak, and Chignik, as well as in marine life history studies and mark recapture studies such as the Deshka and the Susitna. So, any questions?
Thanks, Bill. Time for some questions from panelists. Milo, please do let us know who you are.
Milo Adkison, University of Alaska. Can you go back to that slide that showed the ocean distributions?
Yeah. Sure.
There's some pretty good differences there. Did you break it down any finer than Western Alaska and
Actually, yeah, these are just, I tried to keep it short to keep within 20, which looks like I went over about four. It's also includes South Central Alaska and then Southeast Alaska and down to the Pacific Northwest.
Okay,
so we broke it basically into four large groups.
When's that paper due to come out?
It's actually in review right now.
Okay, thanks.
Bill, so you're using these baselines for some fishery applications. I'm wondering if what the potential is or even the need is for in-season type of analysis of these samples, if that's something that's planned in the future.
Yeah, we generally don't do in-season analysis unless there's a demonstrated need for it because of the additional time and energy that it takes and the additional cost. We only try to do in-season analysis where there's actually a management application and management action that might be taken based on the stock compositions. That said, we do in-season analysis in Chinook in the Yukon River, especially early in the season, where knowledge of this Canadian component can help make decisions based on opening and closing fisheries and subsistence fisheries. Elsewhere, we use it in other species.
All right, thanks, Bill. So that concludes our presentations for session number 2, Stock Assessment of Chinook Salmon in Alaska. Please do fill out your cards if you have questions for this session. We're going to take a break. Yeah, there's people who are available to come pick up the cards. We're going to take a break for about 15 minutes, and I'll give you a 5-minute warning before we start back up, and we'll have our panelists and presenters up here, and we can get into discussion. Thanks.